And welcome to the BS Report. I'm Bill Simmons, and this is my my guest at this time, Muckhouse.
How are you doing, Muckhouse? I'm not sure how I ended up on the Gordon Solie show, or how it is that Gordon Solie's still alive.
This is how Bill Simmons talks, like this.
That is a souplane. A souplane from the world's heavyweight champion.
Welcome to the Gordon Solie Power Hour on Half Gordon. Welcome to the Power Hour on HalfGordon.com. I'll start off by ripping off Bill Simmons. Well, first off, Dan, how you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. Yeah. I mean,
I start off ripping off Bill Simmons because I kind of want to get into our first thing that's been kind of bugging me this week. I saw it on Twitter. Was it Tuesday, Monday night? I was kind of ready to do a rant on it.
Before you start, I just got to say, based on our pre-show conversations, the fucking fuck you of the week this week there's some bile. You know, a lot of weeks we do the show and we're both just happy-go-lucky guys.
Yeah.
We're just like, hey, you know, everything's pretty cool. But this week, it's like, the shit pissed us off this week.
Yeah. And not, like, just kind of mildly annoyed. I don't know about pissed off. I mean, it's my birthday Sunday, Dan, so I'm in a good mood. Not too pissed off. But I was kind of pissed off when I saw that comment from Simmons. And that was on Twitter where you got mad. What was the name of the former writer for
Jonah Carey.
Was it Grantland?
Jonah Carey, one of the best baseball writers. That's a subtext to this. He shit all over one of the best baseball writers working today.
Yeah, who allegedly stole Bill Simmons' trade rankings when really it was just a column of leaf he started at Grantland and did last year for CBS and thanked Bill Simmons, and he did this year too. And then Bill Simmons kind of threw a little shade his way on Twitter, if you will.
Shade is not strong enough. Like, he was just like insanely aggressive over the idea. I mean, the quote was, "Jonah, we don't work anymore. Stop doing my column." That's the rough version of that quote.
But some people kind of maybe thought he was maybe being snarky and joking because he did link to the column. So I do kind of see the thing there with that theory.
Did he link it in the original tweet?
Yeah, he linked it. Okay. He linked it in the tweet. It could have been joking. You just don't know Simmons anymore, and he's kind of lost any, you know, sympathy you're going to have. Because he is just such an asshole. And, like, it's kind of fun to watch him fail at this point. Is that okay, Dan?
I mean, look, Any Given Wednesday was such a terrible show that it's more than okay to root for more punishment for a guy who unleashed something so goddamn terrible.
And The Ringer really hasn't been the best site. Like, I remember going to Grantland a lot and enjoying, like, a lot of their writers, but it seems like they only kept, like, kind of, like, two or three guys I really enjoyed from Grantland. And Simmons definitely wasn't, you know, my favorite there. You know, I think Zach Lowe stayed at ESPN. You had Wimbit Brown go to, what, The New Yorker or something, or New York Magazine or something crazy.
To be fair, it took Grantland a while to develop, like, for guys like Rembert Brown to become, like, a well-known dude writing for Grantland.
Yeah.
So, you know, that is a thing in where it's like, well, let's be fair to old Billy Boy. You know, they didn't just, like, wake up one day and, like, Rembert Brown was like, this guy causing national conversations. They got there eventually.
Yeah, and same thing with Zach Lowe, who's really kind of replaced Simmons as the ESPN kind of internet NBA guy. And for the better, mind you, because Lowe gets basketball much better than Simmons. It can kind of... He's like a good middle ground between, like, a really technical basketball columnist and, like, a guy who doesn't really know what he's talking about. And he kind of can explain the jargon to us, you know, us dummies in the masses, you know. I really love Lowe.
There might be Bill Simmons' legacy as a basketball writer as he introduced most of America to a guy infinitely better at writing about basketball than he is.
No, but I think it is fair to say that kind of some of the basketball thinking with, you know, analysis and smarter, you know, smart stats or whatever the fuck you want to call them, kind of introduced a lot of, like, young basketball fans to that kind of stuff, you know, maybe on more a mainstream level. So that's kind of Simmons' legacy, too, because, like, how much were we really kind of talking about this kind of stuff until the Celtics tried it?
I don't know about that, because, like, I think as soon as Moneyball came out, like it was going to start becoming a discussion in all sports. Yeah. That movie was so hitting the popular zeitgeist in such a way that it was like going to be impossible for that to not be a topic in every sport.
Okay, Dan, I kind of have a weird, bring this up, it kind of, it feels like, you know, maybe someone's just kind of caught on at the right time, maybe it could have been anybody, necessarily. Is it fair to compare him maybe to America Online? Just, like, yeah, they did a good job, they kind of fell into it, and they just kind of fucked it up when they got too big. Is that fair?
Man, you're just touching on one of my favorite topics, which is the original version of America Online.
Yeah.
But that company is in its original form. I don't want to... Here's my thing about Simmons. And it's a thing I tend to think about a lot of people in sports, a lot of like great athletes or great coaches, is that we have a tendency when somebody is at the end of their relevancy in their career to then go back and shit all over them when they were good and when they were young. And like we start trying to minimize their successes because we just don't like the idea that people have peaks and valleys.
Yeah.
Like people are doing that right now with Phil Jackson because Phil Jackson has turned out to be one of the most hilariously incompetent team executives in the history of the NBA. But that doesn't like undo that he was a great coach.
Yeah. Well, I think we're all, Well, I think some people don't want to admit their own kind of mortality. And at some point in life, you're just not as good as you once were. I think to quote the great American poet Toby Keith, I ain't as good, I'm as good once as I forgot how it went. Never mind.
I'm as good as I ever was.
I
ain't as good as I used to be.
So, I mean, it's a Toby. Yeah.
Toby Keith's a terrible ham writer who is a barely functioning alcoholic.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I'm not going to get in too many points for his lyricism.
No, well, I give him points because he's kind of living my dream, Dan. Not with the country shit, but just kind of being mediocre and, like, being a borderline alcoholic and being, like, a millionaire at the same time. That's kind of my dream.
You just always wanted to be, like, Garth Brooks for mediocre people.
Yes. Mediocre.
Like, because Garth Brooks is a goddamn genius, and I will have nobody will ever say opposite. Me and Ireland agree about it. But anyway, but like I think Bill Simmons is like the writing equivalent of Phil Jackson. And I think sports writers get this, writers in general get this a lot, but especially sports writers, because like this is even something Bill Simmons I think has said before. Like as a writer, you probably only have so many good columns in you before the well just runs dry.
Yeah,
and Tony Korn. I think that's something Simmons stole from Kornheiser because Kornheiser always used to say that.
No, but I mean that's something you see now, in entertainment. Yeah,
and now people look at Kornheiser like he's some old joke when it's like Kornheiser used to be the goddamn best in the fucking world.
Yeah,
nobody was better than Kornheiser.
Yeah, like 17 years ago, that dude he was probably on top of journalism. I mean, he had a sitcom.
Tony Kornheiser. Based on him. If you don't know what Tony Kornheiser used to be, go read Tony Kornheiser's profile he did of Rick Barry. I think about a year or two after Rick Barry got fired as an NBA announcer after the watermelon comment he made to Bill Russell. And it was like he did this really long profile on Rick Barry, and it's one of the best pieces ever written about a sports figure.
No.
And I think about that column like once a month, really. Yeah. Anytime like some athlete acts like a total asshole, I think of that column. But like, Bill Simmons in his day, like was writing about sports in a way nobody else was, and he was really entertaining. And then he got old.
Yeah, but I think there's something else we don't give him credit for. Podcasting. The BS Report was probably one of the first sports podcasts that people listened to, especially in mass. It's still like one of the most popular. And he kind of made just regular guys talking about sports kind of a thing. I think that's fair. I put like him and the Basketball Jones guys up there. It's like the two just kind of just regular dudes talking about sports. They kind of started the sports podcasting, you know, thing that we're in now.
I just have a hard time giving anybody credit for podcasting who's not named Ricky Gervais or Jimmy Pardo. Because those were the guys.
I mean, but the BS Report was like the biggest sports podcast, I think, there was. I think it still is. Like, probably the most successful, most downloaded ever.
I mean, but Bill Simmons just went into it because his old buddy Adam Carolla, like, he got a big podcast. And why did Adam Carolla go do one? Well, because, like, Jimmy Pardo had a big success with it, and Adam Carolla was like, well, I'm more famous than
Jimmy Pardo. But in terms of sports, Dan, there was no one else really doing that type of thing.
I guess, but somebody was gonna, because the comedy podcasts were so popular.
Yeah. But that's American. That's why I compare him to America Online. Someone was going to be a big provider, and they just kind of leapt into it through whatever. And that's what Simmons was. Like him or not, maybe he didn't build everything, but he was the guy who was there and took advantage and built a brand. And we're kind of seeing that brand kind of blow up now because it couldn't really stand on its own.
I think people undersell something about Bill Simmons in the way that a lot of people undersell really good radio personalities. Everybody thinks that it's really super easy, but it's really not that easy to be very funny and incisive without being able to, like, curse the way we do. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, we can tackle topics on a show like this because we're just two guys on a great internet website.
Yeah.
Whereas if you're, like, working for Disney, you have to, you have to stay away from certain topics. You have to be gentle with certain topics, but to be able to build an audience that loves you while operating in those parameters is not easy. So I think part of why The Ringer is not the success that Grantland was, has yet to equal Grantland's success, is because when Grantland started, Bill Simmons was still writing regularly and basically, like, single-handedly keeping the place afloat until other writers got popular. He basically used his column to bring in readers who then, like, learned, oh, man, Jonah Carey's awesome. I'm going to read him. And then Simmons slowly phased himself out. And now Simmons has started a new website, and I don't think he's got the ability to turn it back on and bring people in with his own column the way he did it, Grant.
Yeah, until he kind of finds that stud. He'll probably luck out and find a stud because Simmons has been a pretty lucky guy. Speaking of luck and new stars, Dan, though, I want to shift to the newest sports star, and that's LeVar Ball. LeVar Ball will be the biggest ESPN personality of the year. We'll be tired of LeVar Ball by November, but right now I'm all in on LeVar Ball mania. I love this guy. He was on First Take today, recording on Thursday, and that was probably the first time I watched First Take. I went back and watched the rerun today, just to see that man and Stephen A. Smith argue. And that was, it was great pro wrestling. Basically, First Take got their heel back. Because Skip Bayless was the best heel ever. And Stephen A. Smith couldn't really kind of be that heel in wrestling talk. He couldn't be the bad guy that you hate. LeVar Ball can, and you're going to love to hate him. He reminds me of, like, The Rock in 1998. This guy's got charisma. He just says whatever the fuck, and you just kind of like it. I'm all in on this guy.
I think part of his success, and it's part of the success that Charles Barkley has had in his career, part of the success that Shaquille O'Neal has had, although not nearly as successful as Charles Barkley, but that so few players are willing to publicly shit on other players because of the player fraternity. And when you have a player who has the credibility that comes from, I played the game, brother, who's then willing to actually, like, speak openly and speak his mind, and maybe in a calculated fuck this guy kind of way, because I know what I'm doing. It attracts an audience that, frankly, a nerd like Skip Bayless will never be able to touch what somebody like Charles Barkley can do by doing the same act, but having the credibility of being a former player.
Yeah.
And I think LeVar sort of steps into that.
Yeah. Not that he's a former, but you kind of believe, like, also LeVar Ball, like, he's kind of like your badass dad. Like, if that guy's your dad, you're just going to let him do whatever the fuck, because he can probably kick your ass. Doesn't matter how old you are.
You go calling him to go beat up somebody else's dad who you got into a fight with.
You tag your dad. You'd hire him to come beat up the bully's dad. Because, like, this guy's a badass. You know, it's, he's not like... And no one ever tells him no because he just kick your ass. That's what makes him cool, too. Because one day you think he might snap and just kill somebody. And how great would that be? You know, if he just, like, punched, you know, Max Kellerman or somebody in the face.
Also, I mean, never underestimate how powerful it is when somebody just says something so fucking... I mean, if there's any lesson of the last year.
Yeah.
Never underestimate the power of somebody who just says something so fucking bizarre that he disarms everybody by who are left going, wait, what? Wait, you don't believe that, do you? Like, the fucking guy stands up there going, I can beat MJ one-on-one. MJ was only good because of five-on-five. I was always better one-on-one than him.
Yeah, but you know what? I kind of believe him. I'm like, I don't know. I don't know if he could beat... I don't know if MJ could beat him one-on-one.
Michael Jordan spent, like, the first 10 years of his career beating whole teams one-on-five. Yeah.
Well, I mean, that's
I'm
what
pretty
I'm
pretty sure
this
you can take the one guy.
We'll see. I think we're going to get that. Here's my other kind of thought I had. I'd like to see the whole Ball family, Lonzo and LaMelo, who's kind of a high school star right now, join kind of the Big Three. I'd like to see that be a team in the Big Three. Cube's 3-on-3 league. I'd like to see the Ball family.
What I definitely think is that the Ball family could beat the Jordans in a pickup game.
Yeah. I kind of want to see the Ball family just kind of travel the country. I want to see the Ball boys just travel the country and play. I don't even want to see Lonzo Ball go to the NBA now. I want to see Big Three, and I want the Ball family play in ex-NBA stars 3-on-3.
Well,
I'd watch that.
All I know is that LA stands for LeVar's awesome. That's all I know.
So, big fan of that guy. We mentioned college basketball. We didn't really discuss it last week. It was the start of the tournament. So, let's jump in now, Dan. I guess you got to watch some March Madness games this weekend. Sure. And boy, was it a fun weekend.
I'm suddenly now feeling pretty good about next year's NC State season with their new coach, who's got me excited. So,
yeah.
the ACC did not cover itself in glory. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, ACC has another best performance. We kind of know March Madness can be a crapshoot. And I think the big problem with some of the ACC teams that went down, to me, the teams that do well in March Madness kind of have one player that can kind of take over a game and make a big difference. And you didn't really have that at Duke. FSU, not really. And we'll see how UNC kind of keeps going. But they almost blew it, too.
You know, I think UNC will be there. I think UNC could make the Final Four. Like, like Roy Williams' teams are kind of built for March basketball. Because he builds his teams off athleticism first and foremost. And when refs start swallowing their whistles and you're more athletic, you know,
Yeah, good things will happen. And I don't know if you saw this, breaking news, recording this on Thursday. Oregon takes down Michigan, who kind of had the Cinderella story. But I kind of thought Oregon would... I like this Oregon team a lot, actually. I have them in my Final Four.
I'm not even going to pretend to know anything about Oregon. All I know is I thought that Michigan team was going to make it all the way, but apparently they're not, so...
Yeah. Well, there you go. I actually had this matchup in my bracket. I did pick Villanova, who kind of hurt me. Besides that, though, my bracket's looking really strong. So Duke going down really helped me a lot. And that was bracket talk that no one cares about.
Yeah, part of the thing with Villanova, though, is that because they won last year, they tricked everybody into forgetting that Villanova chokes every other year except last year.
Yeah, that's what kind of...
Last year was the first time Villanova hadn't lost in the first or second round.
That's what intrigues me. You've got Gonzaga, West Virginia now. If they can get past West Virginia, part of me wonders if maybe it's Gonzaga's year, because I'm used to Gonzaga kind of blowing it. Are they this year's Nova? Where they're the team that kind of blows it every year, but does win one eventually. Because, I mean, the Gonzaga team's clearly pretty good, although I don't think anyone knows anything about them. That's fair to say.
Who watches the West Coast Conference? Not me.
Yeah.
That's for sure.
Yeah, I watch in Pac-12. I mean, because the stars were in the Pac-12, so if you're staying up late, you're probably going to watch UCLA or Washington. Or Arizona, if you're watching West Coast ball. Gonzaga, yeah. No. Am I going to watch Gonzaga, San Diego State, and... 12, you know, at midnight? No.
Can you name a single other team in Gonzaga's conference?
Are they in the WAC?
No, the WAC doesn't exist anymore, but Bubba.
Hawaii.
They're in the West Coast Conference.
Hawaii.
I Hawaii might be in their conference. I don't even know if I can confirm that. I know two of the teams in their conference.
Pepperdine.
Can you? Pepperdine might be. Yeah, that's probably true.
I'm pretty good with the WAC. Yeah, these West Coast teams. I do know them because they all have funny names.
I'm pretty sure. I know for a fact St. Mary's.
Mm-hmm.
And BYU plays all their non-football sports in the West.
St. Mary's was a school that I thought was on the East until recently.
Look.
Because I didn't know Catholics went out west. I thought they all stopped at Chicago.
Oh, if you're a Catholic school, you're either in the Northeast or the West Coast.
Or the Midwest. There are a lot of Catholics in Chicago.
Yeah. Or like the fake Midwest.
Yeah, I guess Notre Dame doesn't count. Yeah, only like the biggest Catholic school. Sure.
That's the fake Midwest.
Yeah.
It was once explained to me that the Midwest is only like Nebraska and Iowa.
Yeah.
And the rest, one else is Midwest.
But speaking of Notre Dame, they did run into West Virginia and lost. I like the job Bob Huggins has kind of done at West Virginia. This guy's just a good coach, Dan. I don't know if he's, like, you know, one of the best coaches ever, but this is a solid guy. I mean, this is a Hall of Fame coach for sure, right? Is that fair to say about Huggins?
I mean, I think so. I mean, people continue to talk about Cincinnati as if they're some major basketball program.
Yeah.
And I kind of wonder about that because when was the last time Cincinnati was any good since Bob Huggins left?
But they do stay a team that goes to the tournament every year, and that's probably 100% because of the legacy and the foundation that Huggins created at Cincinnati. I think that's fair to say.
I mean, I just remember all of Bob Huggins' Cincinnati teams being like nothing but power forwards who would just dunk all over you and block all of your shots, and nobody could dribble.
Yeah, well, he famously had that year with Kenyon Martin, who I believe broke his leg going into the tournament. And that was
won the tournament.
Yeah, and that probably would have been his one title. So, I mean, Huggins is a great coach. He's West Virginia now. They're playing Gonzaga. They're playing tough. I think if West Virginia wins, though, it's time to start talking about Bob Huggins. He's probably one of the best coaches in college right now.
Sure.
Because he's done a very good job at West Virginia, building a program that was nothing. And, you know, a team that's in the tournament every year. The Sweet 16 most years now, it feels like.
Yeah. I mean, he's done a great job there. You can't take that away from him.
Yeah. Any other things from the tournament?
Or his defibrillator went off during the middle of a game this year.
Yeah.
Which is always fun.
That's right. One last thing I want to talk about the tournament, Dan. Did you see this kid from Northwestern? Who was crying as his team was losing.
I did see that shot.
Was it fair to meme this kid, or is that just the world we live in now? This kid would probably be killed for crying and, like, you know, burned at the stake, so now we just kind of make fun of him on social media. So are we that much worse? You know?
I would say it is both the world we live in, and it's also bullshit because it is like a 9-year-old or a 12. Yeah. I'm terrible at judging ages of children. If you're under the age of 18, you're pretty much like all 9-year-olds to me.
Yeah.
But I don't think people totally understand that when you're like spreading somebody crying all over the internet, there's like, well, that guy's gonna have to live that kid's gotta go to school tomorrow and deal with this.
Yeah. I think the thing with that kid, though, it's like by the time he hits puberty, no one's really going to remember it, especially if he moves towns. So move towns, kid. That's what you move towns and become like a Notre Dame fan.
Move
you got
to
a job at Northwestern. Yeah.
Move to Indianapolis.
Yeah, no one will find you in Indianapolis. Yeah. That's
you
where you
go to
move,
the Children's Museum. Indianapolis and their famous Children's Museum. I got a lot of Indianapolis knowledge.
They have a lot of fast food restaurants, too, right? Like they have more. Like, just like a taste of the whole country, yeah.
Yeah. The Steak and Shake is the big one, though.
Yeah.
Like, that's the one everybody goes
to. But I feel like they're, like, one of the few towns where you get, like, Chick-fil-A and Whataburger, you know.
It's the melting pot of fucking shit that will give you diabetes.
It's the Statue of Liberty, yeah.
The average person in Indianapolis has to be rolled to and from their car.
Yes.
Like a fucking...
Yeah, people are either 400 pounds or like 100 pounds because they're addicted to opioids. So, and that's the Midwest.
A friend of mine from Indianapolis when he moved from Indianapolis, he was like a 300 pounder as like a 12 year old, and now he's like 170 pounds and looks like and he's fit as shit. It's like he got away from Indianapolis. Like Indianapolis was gonna kill him. So.
All right, but I want to kind of jump to our next. Yeah, I kind of want to jump to our next thing though, and I want to talk about what's kind of happening with Colin Kaepernick. We're kind of in the second or third kind of final wave of free agency in the NFL now, Dan. And we're seeing a lot of quarterbacks who clearly aren't better than Kaepernick getting signed. And it looks like the owners are kind of blackballing him. Yeah. Is that fair to say?
I mean, I don't see any other reason for that. Any other argument for that.
Mm-hmm.
Because the argument that he's going to be a problem in your locker room, it's like there's no evidence that any of his teammates were put off by anything he did. Now, if you're arguing that none of the coaches want to coach him, well, that says something about the coaches, doesn't it? But that's also a different argument. I do wonder
I think
if
we've talked about this
as much as the other coaches. Okay. Just like are a bunch of people who just do not want to coach him, don't want to be associated with him.
I think a lot of it, Dan, though, too, is football culture. In football, you're supposed to be, like, part of this big blob. You know, like, no one's... Individuality is kind of... I think we've talked about this before. Football is kind of like this weird fascist state where, like, you have to wear gray all the time and, like, colors aren't allowed, and that's football.
It's basically the giver.
It's very similar to baseball. Then we might get into that in a second, but I want to stick with football. Football is like the kind of culture, if you do anything that's against the grain or you speak out or have a personality, even if it's not just the NFL, it's in high school, everything. And it's not just a black or white issue. It's just anytime you do something against this herd mentality, you're kind of ostracized in the football world.
You
I think that's fair to say, right?
You are only allowed to be an individual if you are a Hall of Fame caliber player.
Yeah.
And the most annoying thing to me is when football fans will defend the NFL and defend teams making the decisions on someone like Kaepernick by applying that logic and saying, well, that's just the way it is, as if that makes any – as if that's logical.
Yeah.
Like, hey, you just – that's the way it is. Like, I think Bomani Jones tweeted about this, but people are so desperate to believe in the idea of meritocracy. They're so desperate to cling on to this idea that's been disproven over and over and over and over again, that the cream always rises to the top, that it doesn't matter who you are, where you come from, if you're just talented enough, you'll make it. People will not let that go despite all evidence telling them it's not true.
Yeah, when in the reality, it's just people have the advantages just kind of luck into things.
Yep.
That's the truth. Most people are just, your boss, he ain't that much smarter than you. You know, he's probably just as dumb as you, maybe dumber, you know. I think that's, something most people don't want to think, because then you kind of realize how fucked up our world kind of is, Dan. Where everyone in charge is really just a dumbass. You know, they're just as dumb as you. They're smelling their farts just like every other idiot, you know. It's fair to say.
And in Kaepernick's situation, he is being punished for being an individual, for having an individual take on something that is not in the mainstream, that is not easily marketable, that is not, something that you could easily sell to the average person as like, yeah, this is what you should believe too. Because he doesn't have that easily digestible, easily defended viewpoint, that makes him somebody that worthy of being blackballed. And I'm willing to bet that his union won't even do anything for him.
No, because that's one of the worst unions.
The NFL union is fucking worthless.
Yeah. It's just always funny how, like, when you hear stuff about the NBA looking out for player health and, like, trying to do things so the players won't have to rest as much and things like that. Meanwhile, the NFL just wants to change commercial times. They don't care if their players are abusing pain pills or getting traumatic brain injuries or beating their wives.
The NFL union is so worthless. But that brings up something is like people want to give like Adam Silver all this credit for being this wonderful, great commissioner, which tells you something about how easy it is if you're a white dude in power to get people to love you. Like the fucking Pope, like these fucking liberals who love the current Pope, but like how low the standards are for people who are in a position of authority. Yeah. It's like the reason why NBA players get all that is because they have a union worth a damn.
Yeah.
Like the NBA doesn't have the position to railroad through them the way the NFL owners do.
Yeah.
NFL owners are allowed to do whatever they want to do, and they can completely destroy a man's career, end his ability to play, when he's better than half of the starting quarterbacks in the NFL right now. But he's not going to get to even be a backup to make a living for him and his family because owners don't want to be associated with him.
Yeah, because owners he has an opinion about – it was a different political opinion. Meanwhile, don't forget a guy like Greg Hardy got a second chance, and he choke-slammed his girlfriend.
Yeah, Greg Hardy's literally a monster who got chance after chance after chance, you know. And hey, an owner is a willing supporter of a fucking psycho racist weirdo.
Yeah.
But hey, that's fine. That's fine.
Yeah. Sure. But let's jump kind of maybe our finalish topic here on the show. We're keeping it tight for spring. I want to jump into the World Baseball Classic, Dan, and you kind of have a rant about baseball, don't you hear?
And it's crystallized by Ian Kinsler's comments he made. And let me pull those comments up, read those for you. Ian Kinsler said, I want all the American kids to go out there and watch the way we play the game. Watch the way we play the game and how we play the game the right way. Because watch the Dominicans and the Puerto Ricans. Watch the way they play. They don't play the way we do. But let me
because they were raised right. Yeah. I think you said kids, something in there, yeah.
I hope kids watching the WBC can watch the way we play the game and appreciate the way we play the game as opposed to the way the Puerto Rico plays or the Dominican plays. Which sounds dangerously close to talking about the Dominican skull shape, but I'll let that slide.
That's if you not look at how big their cranium is, you can see the Dominican does not have the brain capacity to understand baseball.
We can see that the emotional sectors of their brain are overly developed, but the intellect is, whatever. the fucking phrenologists who run baseball teams.
But how many chrenologists do you think there are? Like, I bet a lot of those players believe in chrenology. If you, like, broke it down...
Well, look, the reality is that fucking people are so goddamn stupid that if you just put a YouTube video up, like fucking hosted by Paul Joseph Watson, these fucking, these goddamn idiots will believe it. So, but continuing the quote, that's not taking anything away from them. That's just weren't the way we were raised. They were raised differently. And to me, show that's emotion and passion.
Yeah. To me, that's, like, the comment that, like, cuts the worst. Because it's not like they don't really do things the right way. He's saying, like, their whole culture is fucked up, and I don't like it. It's not like I don't even like people who act like that. It's like, fuck those people. They're bad. Fuck their culture. It's not even saying, like, you know...
It's like
I think there is a way, Dan, to kind of say what he meant and it not come off as, like, so brain-dead and dumb. But he's very brain-dead, you know, brain-dead and dumb because he's a baseball player. But I think there's a way for him to...
They don't even have a good excuse for being brain dead.
Yeah.
But, like, what drove me crazy about that Ian Kinsler comment is that it summed up why baseball is a dying sport. And this is where somebody who's a huge fan of baseball will jump in and go, actually, point of order, the attendance has never been higher. Oh, we're doing so well. Baseball's doing so well. Baseball, I'm going to put my fingers in my ears. Baseball's doing well. Baseball's doing well. Meanwhile, there's a 30-year trend of a complete collapse of baseball ratings on television, which started long before we hit our current era of television, where TV ratings are down for, you know,
And attendance to baseball games, and to be fair, attendance to a baseball game is a lot different than someone who's necessarily, like, a hardcore baseball fan. Like, if you go to a Braves game, most people there don't really give a fuck about the game. They're just there having fun because it's nice weather. They're having a beer. Well, baseball game's more an event. It's different. It's something to do. It's not like a, Like, say, if you go to a football game where the football game's the primary focus, baseball game's just something going on while you sit
this
outside.
This is also the idiot loser argument that fucking hockey fans make. Well, yeah. Actually, hockey is the most fun sport to see in person. And if you went to see it, you'd know that our sport's really the best. And it's like, yeah, that's fine. Nobody gives a shit.
Yeah.
There's not a single person who lives in a state where the average temperature gets above 60 degrees for the year who gives a single shit about hockey. And there's not a
single
person.
You know what they're going to see hockey? They're going to get out of the fucking cold. That's what you're doing. That's what went to the Thrashers in Atlanta. Why the fuck would you? It's cold in there.
And there's not a single person who lives in a city, who doesn't live in a suburb, who gives a shit about baseball.
Yeah. Well,
nobody
that's not
plays
fair.
It. Nobody's kids play it. It's a thing that old men watch because it used to be something that was big. And their baseball... In a similar way to pro wrestling, because we do talk about pro wrestling every now and again on this.
Yeah.
But, like, baseball has managed to make more money from a dwindling group of people in the same way that wrestling nowadays... WWE is successful because never before have wrestling fans spent more money per head. But the reality with the wrestling demographics is where if things do not change in wrestling, in 20 years it won't exist as a thing. Because the audience just keeps dwindling. And has been consistently dwindling for like 20 years now.
Yeah.
Baseball, their audience has been slowly declining for 40 years. And we reached a point about 5 years ago, maybe 5 to 10 years ago, where the decline became hit a point, the decline of baseball hit a point where nobody knows who any of the stars are. Like when the people of the Derek Jeter era and the Alex Rodriguez era, when they all started to retire and they were finally gone and now it's just the people who came after them, nobody knows who any of these people are. And part of the reason that has exacerbated that is because of the cult of the Ian Kinslers of the world, of the mediocre white guy, Ian Kinsler, a guy who made like 3 All-Star games and thinks he's a goddamn somebody. Who goes, oh, don't draw attention to yourself. We play the game the right way. We don't draw attention to ourselves. Well, yeah, buddy, you got a whole league full of mediocre white dudes and who will not draw attention to yourselves. And guess what? Nobody knows who the fuck any of you are. And the sport's dying.
Yeah.
Mike Trout is probably the best player in baseball. He could walk down the street right now in the middle of the day. Down Main Street with a shirt on saying, hey everybody, I'm Mike Trout, and nobody would know who the fuck he is.
No, and I think there's even, you know, there's even like a small, maybe more like a minority consensus now that like, you know, Asian baseball may have overtaken American pro baseball as the better league. I mean, there are people who will swear that the best Japanese team will always beat the best American team.
I mean, I'm not willing to necessarily go there
But it's closer than it ever has been where the MLB might not even be the premier baseball league in the world. Because I bet, you know, in a couple of years, some of those leagues in Asia might be a bigger draw at some point.
I mean,
especially if baseball ever, like, got big in China.
Yeah, the issue that Major League Baseball will always have is that they have the money right now to pay people to come in. But, I mean, you know... It could hit a point where baseball gets like Premier League soccer in Britain, where all the good play, like for all the talk about England and America, English soccer is garbage. Like their homegrown players are like basically MLS quality, but the leagues, because of their fan bases, have the money to go import actual good soccer players. I wouldn't be shocked to see that point hit. To hit the same point in America.
No, and there are other factors.
Where the level of American athlete playing baseball gets so pathetic that this league has to survive based on imports.
Yeah, and you may not even have that soon because of, you know, things out of the MLB's control with, you know, immigration or the political climate, where some players might be like, I'm not going to America. I'm just going to stay here in Japan. They're crazy in America. Are you kidding? They might arrest me for sneezing at the airport. You know?
Fucking have an iPad with me, and they fucking shot me.
Yeah, something like that. So, I mean, there are players who probably wouldn't want to come to America right now. I think that's a realistic thing where that's something that's out of baseball's hands, but it is something they'll have to adapt to, especially if our political climate kind of stays where it is.
But baseball will never get back to the point it used to have in American culture until the sport comprehensively, like, cuts through this fucking horrendous self-defeating culture that has sprung up in baseball that basically acts like the individual is something to be despised. Like, they have ground out any individuality out of baseball, smoothed away any uniqueness in a sport that is built on uniqueness and individual personalities and weird things happening. That this is not football, where you can turn everybody into a bunch of little automatons. Baseball has been successful because of individuals, because of people like Babe Ruth, like Hank Aaron, like Willie Mays, like Mickey Mantle, like Ricky Henderson,
Mark McGwire, Sammy Sosa, Barry Bonds, even
Ken Griffey Jr.
Yeah,
you know.
No, I think even Dan, you know, you mentioned the lack of the stars. Look at the premier baseball game, MLB The Show. Who's on the cover this year? Ken Griffey Jr. And, you know, you mentioned WWE famously kind of got some weird heat among their fan base when they had, you know, The Rock and Stone Cold on their covers. Because they didn't have any stars with mass appeal.
Yep.
And this baseball is a similar effect. Yeah.
Baseball and wrestling are basically the same thing. That's my big rant. And the reason why is because these fucking kids don't know how to work. That's the bottom line.
Yeah. Yeah. I think before we get out of here, I think we both kind of have some FUs of the week. Yeah, I'll go first.
Well, I mean, I could go first because it's Ian Kinsler, and yeah. You just heard why. So continue. I'm done. I just shit on him.
My FU of the week. I don't know. There's a lot of news this week. I'm even looking like outside of sports. There's a lot of people to throw a fuck you at. Dan, I think my FU of the week, I think it's going to go to Karl Malone. Here's why. He called out players for resting. He said players shouldn't rest until you've been in the league 10 years or something ridiculous. And here's my thing with Karl Malone. He's a piece of shit. He's a horrible father. Was never there for his kids. I'm not going to listen to anything he says. Even if he's an expert on basketball, fuck you, Karl Malone. You know why you want to play in those games? Because you don't want to be around your damn kids. That's probably why. That's why you're missing the games.
Back on you.
Yeah.
Because here's my issue with Karl Malone. He is the definition of a fucking perfect attendance motherfucker. And if there's anything I hate, it's a perfect attendance motherfucker who thinks he deserves respect because he shows up every day. You know what? You showed up every day, and by the end of the season, you were trash. Maybe you should have taken some more days off, Karl Malone, because by the time anybody needed you to actually win some games, you were hot fucking garbage every year in the late games of the playoffs. Maybe Jerry Sloan should have rested you a little bit. Maybe.
Yeah. So, you know, fuck you, Karl Malone. And if you got kids, spend time with your kids. Don't be a piece of shit.
But Karl Malone never saw an opportunity to throw other black dudes under the bus that he didn't take.
Yeah.
That's the other Karl Malone story. Just hates his kids because they're black. Man, yeah. If he had white kids,
he's probably got like one white, like one light-skinned kid gets everything. You know? They named Tommy. Or some white, or Bort. Tommy Bort.
I definitely believe he named a kid Bort.
Bort. That just Bort Malone. Might
be a very, that may be just a common name in Louisiana. So, no, not Bort, T-Bort. Right. Every other kid in Louisiana is named T-Bort.
But that's it for me. I think next week we'll have a WrestleMania preview, and we're going to break down the Final Four, because we're going to get to the end of the championship, baby.
The two most important sporting events of the year, the Final Four and WrestleMania.
All on the same weekend. Can't beat it. The real March, April madness. Spring Madness.
Sure. Spring Stampede. Yeah. There's a real pay-per-view. Fuck all WrestleMania. Right. We're just going to review Spring Stampede 94.
That's Spring Stampede. 2000. Anyway. Was that the one with David Arquette? No, that was Slam Breed.
Oh, probably. I lose track of WrestleMania 2000, even though I did a podcast where we reviewed every pay-per-view of 2000. I still don't remember any of it.
I do. I'm an expert. I'm an expert on bad WCW wrestling and mid-season sitcoms. This is my wheelhouse.
If The Ringer is hiring somebody to write about bad mid-season sitcom, which does sound like a Ringer pitch.
Something they would do, yeah.
So fucking weird and obscure. You're their guy.
Yeah, you're their Huckleberry. I'm the guy. I'm their Huckleberry baby.
But there's somebody else who's our Huckleberry, and his name is Jason Oanston. And play the music, Jason.